Well, I'm David Liggett with Data Center Hawk, and I am very excited to be sitting here with Tom Traugott. Tom is with EdgeCore. Tom, thank you for joining. Very excited to have you here.
Thanks, David. Excited to be here, and kudos to really everything Data Center Hawk's done. I think we've talked from the early days when you kind of made the jump and made the bet that this frankly, bringing market research and sort of a third party opinion to the sector would be valuable, right?
Right on.
And it's borne out, you know.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. It's quite a journey. Like all of us, if you look back over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a lot of excitement. And you're now sitting so with EdgeCore, Senior Vice President of Strategy, have a very significant role there, but have obviously been playing in this space for a long time. People obviously know who you are, but for those that don't, maybe talk about how your path led you to this role at EdgeCore.
Happy to. So I started the, I think I saw my first data center in 2003, out of the ashes of the .com, telecom bust. And, being a child of the 90s, I believe that the internet wasn't going away.
Sure.
And, I started commercial real estate brokerage and office leasing in Manhattan, and ended up working on a couple of projects, data center projects, or probably carrier hotel projects when I was there. And I got hooked. I didn't see, I think the industry lost a lot of people early 2000s when things went upside down. And, I kind of pushed my chips to the center of that table. I started, cut my teeth in commercial real estate. It's where, I had to put together market reports, for
I know the pain.
Office leasing and in that transition when CoStar was just about taken over, right? So you kind of, then it ultimately became sort of, you got some better information than from CoStar and tweaked the stats a little bit to put your own, but sure. I had to make the calls, right?
Yep.
And that's, the core, and I think again, that's what I think I really appreciate for your side. You're making the calls, and you're making that. The lack of transparency in our sector is almost inhibits growth, right? Our industry. I think the capital markets folks that are interested in learning more. We've got a lot of handcuffs in terms of what we can actually say.
Sure.
Given confidentiality and security and the like. So it's great to have that. So origins commercial real estate. I went all in on data centers. I joined CoreSite, or the predecessor to CoreSite, opened up a new market in Boston, kind of got to see the ascendance of wholesale data centers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some successes, there, and ended up going back to the brokerage advisory side of the business. And as I was working on that, there's a lot of change, I think, in the enterprise wholesale side of things, namely due to cloud. And I think I did everything I could to kind of resist and say cloud's not a thing. It just has to live somewhere. But it really, became overwhelming. So I decided I really wanted to have a look behind the curtain. So I actually went then to AWS for about 4.5 years, switched hats from primarily domestic to primarily international.
What was that like?
Fascinating. I think one of the best things about it was that I'd seen it happen before. Right. So I was on the new region team. So we're setting up new regions and new markets, and kind of as the cloud business realized that over time, every country might get a cloud. So you got to see the pros, cons, the reason, the build versus buy decisions, the foundation, right? And sometimes the original sins that get made in order to launch fast and deliver for businesses. Yeah.
I think to your perspective, I mean, I'm sure sitting where you do at EdgeCore now, just having that experience internationally, and understanding the dynamics of not just region to region, but in those different regions, the market to market changes very different than the US, you know, and even today there are certainly similar macro issues, but there's some micro stuff that you'll never see in the US that you'll see in other places. And so, I would imagine that just really seasoned you even more in the space.
But it also, the similarities are also a lot to hitch to, that your the scaling challenges, the data centers go where data centers were, right? Mm. And that's kind of actually the case around the world, which leads to its own challenges over time, right? If we had to start all over again, you know, certain clusters wouldn't start where they are, because that's not necessarily where the transmission, where the power is. It's where back office data centers might have been, you know, that weren't looking at the same sort of scale. So great education, great way to kind of see how a hyperscaler looks. And then as Tom Rice, so, you know, with the CoreSite background, you know, the EdgeCore platform had just started. Tom had sort of unretired after, stepping down from CoreSite a couple of years before. And we started talking again. And I got on board with what the vision for the platform was going to be, which was new greenfield platform, multi-building campuses with a bit more of a build-to-suit approach. So I think, you know, pre-COVID, it felt like, you know, you could build pretty quickly across the country, right? So, you know, you didn't really have the supply chain issues that you have. So if you had entitlements and power, a building, you could build fairly fast. So we had, you know, we started with this greenfield platform, coast to coast, and, you know, big picture, right? We're kind of in firm, there was an EdgeCore V1 and an EdgeCore V2. And that's, you know, I guess I gave a little bit of my background. I'm happy to go right into the EdgeCore piece.
I love it. Yeah. And I was going to say, talk about the differences between EdgeCore V1 and EdgeCore V2. Like, what have been the changes and what's the focus now?
Yeah, absolutely. So V1, greenfield platform, land, well-positioned land in some primary and secondary markets, entitlements, securing entitlements and power. And we did build one, you know, around 30 megawatt building in Mesa, Arizona, the Phoenix metro market. I'd say that's kind of because of our build-to-suit focus, that was almost like a model home on a, you know,
that's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Big residential development. This could be yours. And if you don't like that, we could build you know, something else for you. So, because there was really more of that, we had perceived some more value in build-to-suit. And I think, and we had some, you know, modest successes along the way. And then COVID, you know, COVID happens, changes the landscape for supply chain and delivery. We really realized and went to our investors to say, listen, we need to go vertical. You know, we're the best position to make the most of this. And, they, you know, it's kind of a reminder that the capital, it has to be rightly aligned. You know, I think they were aligned with, I think, more of this build-to-suit plan, which was a little bit more risk-off, you know, in terms of going, committing that more speculative upfront capital. So we ran a process in 2022 to find a new capital partner. And, you know, it was a, I've joked, it's the equivalent of a amicable divorce, but your soon to be ex-spouse is helping you select the new, your next one. So it's,
that would be, that's a good description too. And
everything has to go right. And really it did. I think that's it great. Was, you know, the existing investors, I think, had a win. There were, you know, they also knew they had exposure to the, you know, the platform type businesses through other investments they had. It just wasn't the right capital mix at the time. So, you know, we ran a process, and a partners group, Swiss private equity, but global, $141 billion AUM, stepped up, and it's been a pretty wild ride. I think we're just a little, a year and change into, their acquisition in late 22, but with a completely different horizon, right? So they invested, $1.2 billion to the business. That was not just buying the platform, it was committing to go vertical. So to put the land to work.
Yep.
And that's kind of where the switch flipped, I think, really from EdgeCore being kind of a land build to suit player to more of a platform. Original CEO Tom, Ray had some health issues, and we were fortunate. Lee Kessler, who was chairman of the board, for the new EdgeCore, and a just absolute veteran of the space, from
very well DuPont, known
from DuPont days and Vantage, kind of not full time, but I think curious and interested enough to make the move. And we're super fortunate that he did, because I think it's, he's been there, done that. And as we're charging into this new world, right, which is that 2 to 3x what, the sizing of everything we'd been thinking about beforehand, Lee's done it before. He's seen, I think the DuPont days, that was evolutionary to the industry, build bigger buildings. And we're similarly there. So also in building more of a vertical platform, an operating platform, we've really built a team to help us advance towards that. So building a really good scaffolding within EdgeCore, but now we're going vertical everywhere. So, and really with the focus, our market, our key customer base, I'd say, is big six, next 50, so we're really, we'll consider multi-tenant, but the demand that we've seen as we've kind of reset and gone bigger with our designs has been more single tenant buildings, if not single tenant campuses. Mesa is a great example. Our first campus, we're going to have, 5 30 to 40 megawatt buildings on that campus.
It's changed. And
we went bigger. So now we're, you consolidate that. That's three buildings. The first building is, about 30, but building two is 108, building three is 72, right?
Wow.
And we've got another campus that we'll be announcing in probably next few months. That'll be, similarly 100 plus megawatt, in terms of focus. So, and that seems to resonate. I like to say with the hyperscalers, and having been on that other side, we talk to the wall a lot. Sometimes the wall talks back, and what we've realized is that as we've gone bigger, the wall's been talking back.
And
the recognition of that.
Yeah, and I think you've pointed out a number of trends that we talk about a lot, related to how the industry has changed. One being, you mentioned the capital needing to be aligned with the actual platform. And I think when that isn't, you can really feel the pain. And when it is, you can really see the growth. And I think that EdgeCore is a great example of that over the last year, to see all that you've done and the successes that you've had. The other thing that you mentioned that I thought was really good was just about the original plans of a campus being 30 to 40 megawatt buildings. That's where the industry was 3 years ago, four Absolutely. Years ago. And that really served what people believe that the growth might be. And then I think we started seeing these conversations around 100 megawatt buildings and 500 megawatt campuses and even more than that. And so it really makes sense.
I mean, even before AI, and I think we've been looking at, observing, watching AI for a bit to see when it would really take hold.
Yeah,
but as if you also think back in our industry, every 7 to 8 years there's something, right?
Yeah.
That just causes the size of everything to increase by 2 to 3x.
Yeah,
right. Because if I go back to 14, 15, with my prior employer, you couldn't build more than a 32 critical megawatt building. It was kind of you'd violate risk, you know, considerations. And before that, you know, okay, then so that's 32, and you go back to, you know, 2007 or so. What are your biggest buildings? 15 to 20, sure, right? And that's in late 90s, you're five. So it, like, if not even predicting AI, the evolution seems to, you know, just been consistently about going bigger eventually.
And talk about how that's changed with the market view of where it makes sense to build today. So, you know, I think those that listen to us a lot would know that, you know, Dallas, Chicago, Phoenix, Northern Virginia, Atlanta, Northern California, those have been kind of the big six markets in the U.S. Those are still great markets. There's a ton happening there and will always happen there. But we're seeing some other secondary and tertiary markets emerge. Talk about that. Why is that happening? Yeah. And what do you think the trends will be moving forward with that?
Well, an interesting dynamic we've, you know, heard about is there's concerns about, you know, cannibalizing the ability of an existing region to grow, right? So that leading to some spillover effect. So AI, so a cloud region has, you know, cloud's still doing great, right?
Sure.
I mean, the growth of cloud is still healthy double digits on, you know, these, you know, very healthy multi-billion dollar businesses, right? And then you drop AI and the requirements for AI, which are exponentially higher. You know, the growth forecast. So, you know, I've spoken to, you know, ex-colleagues and folks that have moved around the sector, but really it's a whale of unforecasted growth that creates challenges. The proverbial good problem to have, right? But that incremental megawatt is supporting organic cloud growth, region growth, you know, customers, right? Existing customers have more data that gets generated on the cloud. And basically within a, you know, within a region and availability zone, you know, you can translate their data growth and their needs directly to servers and megawatts within a region, just for their own growth. And if you drop a, you know, 100 megawatt bomb of AI on top of that, it's potentially cannibalizing or, you know, challenging. So I think that's also prompted some of the surge in, you know, what were secondary or tertiary markets, kind of this increase, all the moves that you're starting to see around the country. And there's a herd mentality still, right? It helps to have some existing clustering. There are some end users that can really be market makers, be the first to, you know, Amazon announced Mississippi, you know, and there's going to be opportunity for them to set up some meaningful, you know, scale there because there's no one else there, right? But meaningful infrastructure. You know, I think the providers, you know, like us, we're often going to be more, you know, second or third to the market. We may not be able to get as intrepid to be able to convince our investors, but it does create, you know, we've got writ large power demands, power challenges due to a surge in demands that is, I think, leading to, you know, a more open approach for what markets could play. The contrast, right? So for Europe, right, you didn't, it wasn't for latency purposes that you set up a cloud in France, you know, when you have one in Germany, right? Mm-hmm. It's sovereignty, it's all of that. Fortunately, U.S., we don't have sovereignty concerns from state to state. You know, you can, it's latency and performance and costs that go into the mix and incentives, but we've got open borders to deliver, you know, cloud services and AI services almost anywhere. So that does really open things up and create such scale, right? I mean, the openness on the AI front, I'm a believer that the vast majority of these AI, the AI hardware, your H100, your MI300s from AMD, probably going to land in the U.S. first. look at some of the clamps that are regulatory risks around the world, it'll be everywhere. Kind of convinced on that, but you have so many more options and opportunities to grow in the U.S.
And to get to that scale, I think, to your point, getting scale in secondary or, overseas in different places can be much more challenging for other reasons. But I think you can accomplish certain levels of scale here in the U.S. right now that you can other places.
Yeah. I mean, our table stakes, as we're starting to look at new market, we're evaluating new markets now. You know, it's 100 acres, 300 MVA minimum, right?
Yeah.
If we can get bigger, and that seems crazy to me. I think I remember when I was at CoreSite in Boston, I think my largest tenant was a megawatt or a megawatt and a half, and we were doing great.
That's a big deal.
That was a monster. Of all things, there was early AI speech recognition, supporting it. But I mean, 300, it now being table stakes, and frankly, we're looking at a path, that proverbial path to gigawatt, right? Or plus. Leading to its own new challenges of, how big is too big and can you really get a utility partner that's, right size with that. But I mean, I think that's it. So that, that's the case in the U.S. Trying to get a 300 megawatt campus anywhere else on the planet.
Tough.
Is real hard.
Yeah. Very tough.
Yeah. We've got some real, there's capabilities across the U.S. and even in some of the secondary, tertiary markets that are hard to replicate, right? So, but that's what the needs of the industry are pointing to.
Sure. So. Another challenge that, besides just scaling up is industry talent, finding the people needed to not just build these facilities, but run them. And I think the industry has been aware of that for years, but what are your thoughts on maybe where our sector is today and the opportunities moving forward to make that better?
Yeah, probably approach it from a couple of angles. One is, with what we have and the team that we have, and reprioritizing. We are going bigger, moving faster than ever before, and there's also a recognition that these are not. they can be very dangerous environments. We're dealing with high voltage, power, large construction projects, with a lot of moving parts and pieces and complexity. So safety, has become paramount. I just finished an updated, CPR first aid, course yesterday as a reminder.
Yep.
And,
yep.
I think I know how to work a tourniquet if I needed to.
Sure.
Not that I want to, right? But we're really up leveling, prioritizing people as a, as a value, but thinking of it as, for our customers in a single tenant building, sort of campus, are going to overlay with their teams, right? And we need to ensure that these are safe environments. We're treating their people, as precious assets, right? For their companies as well. It's part of our trying to be a good steward.
Right on.
So that's within, the domain. And then I think there's a real opportunity that's materializing here also with AI, because AI is on the zeitgeist right now. And I think the curiosity around, how does this work? Right? How does the magic happen? Right? And how does the internet work? I think you kind of getting more interest, I think, in that regard, because there we are, directly supporting, like in Mesa's operator certification programs, try and create more of a pipeline. We are talking to our partners about, frankly, the entire country could use more electricians. Right. So, I think trying to support more vocational training, is helpful. But even more than that is I think trying to connect the dots more. I think the relative invisibility, and again, that's kind of, you know, where you guys have brought value here is trying to shine more of a light on what's happening. But I think our industry has hidden in the shadows. You know,
yep.
It's, you know, what's that over there? It's just a warehouse. Don't ask too
sure.
many questions. Keep moving, right?
Yeah.
Coming out of the shadows, being more visible in the communities, and connecting the dots that
yep.
this is all this magic of the internet and you know, the new platforms of AI. There's a bricks and mortar,
yeah,
you know, component to this to help this work, right? And I think that big picture, the more our industry is visible, and we can kind of explain the building blocks and how we get there, I think that's going to help. But the, you know, the blocking and tackling is, you know, trying to support more education and the like. But really, I think it's ensuring that people are taken care of. You know, that we're also, you know, we've talked about one of the things with AI and data centers. AI goes 24/7, right? That model is ongoing, and we probably need to start looking at, and I know we have, but you know, you're looking at almost like a firefighter or nurse, you know, sort of staffing model, right? Because you've got on-call emergencies and coverage for something that's 24/7, mm-hmm. and people aren't 24/7, right? The demands of data centers as they get bigger are only kind of going to get, doesn't necessarily fit, humans don't entirely fit with the demands of AI, right?
Sure.
So we need to make sure that we're taking care of our people.
Yeah, that's good. What do you think are, you know, like staying on the AI conversation, I mean, how do we as an industry make sure that the capacity challenges we're having right now don't impact the ability for AI to grow, maybe to the extent that people think it can? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's one of the key bottlenecks that keeps being referenced, right? You know, Jensen Huang is, you know, called out the need for, there's big signaling, right? That I think the end users are trying to say is build more data centers, right?
Yeah.
We're going to need homes for these. One of the things that recurs, you know, we need strong utility partnerships, right? They need to, speaking with some of our utility partners, a challenge they have, and if you take a step back, you know, from 2000, you know, I think our peak electrical demand in the U.S., it kind of peaked in the year 2000, and we were on a fairly steady decline until about 2020. And it's complete, and now we're back to 2010, and we're rocket shipping up, you know, to surpass. But if you just think about just simplistic projections, what, you know, if you've had 20 years of declining, you know, grid load, right, and usage, where was that trajectory and line pointing? Was it, would kept pointing down?
Sure.
So part of helping our utility partners and setting things up is, you know, we understand when they go to their regulators, you know, to ask for more load generation, be able to build more, they're finding that, you know, the regulators don't believe them.
Sure.
Right. So there's a healthy amount of, there's a lot of, depending on the market you're in, there's a game of telephone that happens of, you know, we project our needs, you know, our utility partners roll that up and they request the ability to build more and to support it. And, you know, they may or may not be able to convince the regulators to support them in mm-hmm. that investment. Mm-hmm. So some of it's private public-private investment, some of it is also communication. As mm-hmm. the deeper we go, and I think some of our end users, a number of our end users have recognized that as well. You know, on a couple of, you know, conferences, panels, we noticed some, you know, our top site selection folks with the hyperscaler being out there to say, tell us how we can help if you're seeing roadblocks or capacity issues, right? When you're looking upstream, because I think our utilities are in a position, they'd like to help, but it's not automatic for them to just be able to say yes. You know, there's a lot of complexity in that mix. We've brought a gal on who comes from that world.
Yeah.
She's most recently with the hyperscaler, but spent 13 years with Southern Company.
Sure. So
transmission, distribution, substation management, generation. Yep. And that's
so important right now to have that expertise on the team.
Yeah, got to look under the hood. But I do think power is really the big one.
Yep.
I think it's opening up new markets. And we're looking through to say, hey, can we align with the utility? Can we support them in the investments they need to make in order to grow? And we're not the only ones that are going to be asking.
Yeah, I think it is, these problems are so big and challenging that you really have to it's a little different than, you know, an office developer going and building a 100,000 square foot building for an mm-hmm. office tenant. I mean, these are such massive capital intensive projects. They take so much time. If people that are listening, if you've ever walked onto a data center construction project, I mean, especially today, mm-hmm. it's like nothing that,
a Roman war camp, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's wild.
Yeah.
And very, very organized. Yeah. And to your point, safety, at the top of the list from a priority standpoint, but people everywhere doing what they need to make these projects happen. And so it's a fascinating time in our space because you have to really work with the end user and the utility company to be able to deliver what's coming.
Mm-hmm. I think what is interesting too is the tone has shifted, I'd say, as well, because the challenges are getting bigger. Mm-hmm. Kind of realize there's not a single group that's going to solve it. So I think that we've seen it shift. There's a partnership level that I think is legitimate about how the end user and the provider and the utility and the community and the government, like, if we're not working in concert, something's going to fail.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, okay, so maybe wrapping up, you've been in this industry now for 20 plus years ish, mm-hmm. somewhere around there, and you've been around for a while, and I mean that in a good way. When you think about the next 3 to 5 years, what makes you excited about this space? If someone was listening, thinking about getting into the data center space, I mean, what would you say? What's the hook to get somebody plugged into this space?
Sure. If you want to see where the magic, because every time I play around with AI or a new platform, it's at the level of magic to me. If you want to see how that happens and what's needed to create the magic, I think it's at the data center, right? We're the bricks and mortar underpinning, this wave of growth. That take a look at, I mean, NVIDIA earnings, you kind of, you can't stop looking at and trying to unpack, right? And digest. And I think we're affirming that it's not going away. You know, if anything, that this transformation across, the whole industry is going to continue. This is a great way to be part of it, right? And in some ways, if you're not a programmer, if you're not necessarily on the software side, if you're like me, I got into real estate because I liked looking. I like the physicality of it.
Sure.
Right? I like looking at things. I like what. I think that I'm not the only one. I think it really appeals to a lot of people, that the ability to sort of to build. And this is the wave of building that's happening is, I mean, arguably we may need to double the size of our industry over the next 5 to 10 years. So that's exciting. I mean, looking at other, because I think one of the opportunities, candidly, is other parts of the real estate and infrastructure world aren't necessarily doing so hot.
Yeah.
And there's, when you talk about talent, there's a lot of talent out there that may be, looking to pivot, right? And I think that you know, we need builders, we need operators, we need folks that are focused on safety that are bringing some of the lessons of other asset classes and experience. So, you know, it's, you know, talent development, it is at the, you know, it's the new people, right? It's the, it's training folks, recent grads, but it's also helping pivot folks that maybe, you know, frankly, the office industry is real challenged, but there's a lot of talented builders, operators, managers that, you know, could probably, you know, reskill themselves to be, you know, part of this industry too.
Right.
And
on.
I think we're seeing it real time.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think your point about just the way the data center industry has reacted in environments, you know, if you think about the Great Recession in 08, 09, if you think about the pandemic, it's really responded favorably and continued to grow. And I think that's one of the reasons why this industry is as exciting as it is.
Yeah.
So, indeed. Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining. Great to have your perspective, and look forward to catching you next time.
Indeed. Thanks so much.